When Reverend Mokshi and I were going through this shared retreat that lasted for so many months, we literally recognized that we were going through the Litany of the Great Compassionate One step by step. And it's interesting that of the Buddhist scriptures, the Litany of the Great Compassionate One is the only one that came up for me that whole time. The only one that came up. But it came up over and over again, and kind of just one line at a time got illuminated. The Master said that when you go through the third Kensho, everything goes very slowly, and you have plenty of time to get each step, to go through each step and to come to understand something of it. And, you know, this is the reason why I keep saying that, you know, is over and over again, has just, in my own experience, proved the truth of her teaching. You know, this is something that, you know, whether anyone else proves it true for them or not, I proved to my satisfaction she's exactly right on the way those things lay out and on what happens. And the signs along the way, once you've experienced them, the signs are kind of unmistakable signs, and you recognize them. You recognize the signs when they're being basically shown in a scripture. So I just thought I'd go through here and show, in terms of my own experience, how this laid out. This begins with two lines, which are really talking about the same thing. Adoration to the Triple Treasure, adoration to Kanzeon, who is the Great Compassionate One. The thing that leads to a true and complete surrender to the Eternal is a true act of Sangha. And the giving of complete trust to both man and God. So it's not surprising that before the moment of surrender came for me at the end of May, a year and a half ago, there was first a kind of quiet Sangha. It was really just a continuation of what had been happening since the previous fall, which was really just the getting out of the driver's seat, the last bits of getting out of the driver's seat. And then there was also, when it came to the time, if you remember, I asked Reverend Mokshi if I could do some bows to her in the meditation hall. And that was a specific thing that precipitated the surrender. That is, it's that Sangha and that act of trust that is the adoration of the Triple Treasure and the adoration of Kanzeon. And what is it we trust? We trust the Buddha nature, and we trust it in another human being. It can't be an abstraction at this point. It can't be like, oh, I trust the Eternal, but I won't trust man. If human beings have the Buddha nature, one day we've got to put our money where our mouth is and trust another human being completely. And completely means completely. And yes, there is a risk involved, and we gladly take the risk, because to live without taking it is then seen to be a kind of living death, really. You You know, for so many years, I thought the Om to the One Who Leaps Beyond All Fear was talking about us leaping beyond the fear. And I never really realized that the One Who Leaps Beyond the Fear is the Eternal, not us. And this is exactly the problem with the driver's seat point of view. We think that we're the ones who've got to do it. And we try like the Dickens to do it. But how many times have I said in the last year and a half, you know, we can't surrender from the driver's seat. We can't make the surrender happen. It happens when all conditions ripen. And when we at last have opened that last little bit of the heart to the Eternal, then the Eternal whooshes in like a great wind and we're swept away in it. That's the One Who Leaps Beyond All Fear. And this is why, remember I said yesterday or the day before, you know, the secret of our house is the secret of the other house. That's it right there. The One Who Leaps All Beyond All Fear is not you. You'll be carried by that one in the hand of the unborn, the hand of the Eternal, the hand of infinite love. And the harder we try to make it happen, the further we push it away. It's enough for me to know the Lord of the house, the Master said so many times, is enough for me to know the Eternal. Just to be content to live an ordinary daily life, to do the best one can for self and others within the limits that are ordinary human limits. And to be content with one's own training, to reach eventually the point of contentedness where everything rotates around it. One's living from the center of one's being, as the Master said. One's living from the center of one's being. And one is content with that. The rest of the world can look after itself. Who cares? It is enough for me to know the Lord of the house. In that essential stillness, I say essential stillness because it doesn't look like stillness, either to oneself or to others, but it's that one is content with what one has. Within that, at last the Eternal can get a word in edgeways. Surrender is not the end of training, it's just the new beginning. So the surrender comes at the very beginning of the scripture. Then you got to go the journey, be swept along on the journey. Then the colors, in other words, need to start popping out back into the box one at a time. And all one's going to have to go on is just faith in the Eternal. Having adored him, may I enter into the heart of the noble adored Kanzeon. His life is a completion of meaning. It is pure. It is that which makes all beings victorious and cleanses the path of all existence. The point of this is really simple, is that it's about the Eternal and the work of the Eternal, not about us. We have to be willing to be, for that work within our heart to be done, we have to be willing to be just the pipe of something, and to be put through whatever one is going to be put through, and to go through it gladly. this is the point really in the scripture where one is really being shown, one can, as it came up for me, one can give up enlightenment for the sake of living beings. And it just roared out of me at that time, and I am willing. I didn't know the living beings that I was willing to give up enlightenment for were my own karmic inheritance, the aspect of my own karmic inheritance. There was just the I am willing that came welling up. Who is it that cleanses the path of all existence? Not me. I offer body and mind as the pipe for the Eternal to do the Eternal's work, and the Eternal does that work in the Eternal's time and in the Eternal's way, and I'm offered the chance to lend a hand at times. This is why Room Master emphasized after 76 willingness so much. It changes your whole point of view. You know, she took the things she taught before 76, all the tapes she'd done, and she put them away. And we started clean. Because there was now the non-driver seat point of view. Who is it that does the work? What is the work that is done? It changes everything. This particular section ends with, "Oh, hail to the great Bodhisattva." It's the love of the Eternal, the compassion of the Eternal that's going to do it. I'm going to sit still and be willing. It's real simple. My job is real simple. And whatever it is I'm put through, I'm going to look up. Remember, I also had, you know, in the first week, right after this willingness came up in response to the offer, really, that feeling of being that kind of image of being tied down to a railroad track with a whole bunch of locomotives lined up ready to roll over. The wonderful thing about it, see, I didn't know what was happening. You think, well, you've done a lot of training, you'd know. You don't know. You're going on pure faith, you don't know. Something in you is completely content and happy, and you don't know with your head. No matter how much experience of training you've had, you can't know at this point. The slate's got to be clean. And it's just, everything's leaving, enters the mind and leaves it right away, it's whisked away. The only memory that's left is memory of the past. It boils up, starts boiling up. Short-term memory is basically gone. The next line, all is defilement, earth, locomotives lined up. Do the work within my heart. This is the essential prayer. This is the essential prayer for the cleansing of karma. Not I want to clean up my karma. Do the work within my heart. There's all the difference in the world. The first one is driver's seat. The second one is not. Here I am. Do with me as you will. Here I am, do with me as you will. Room Master really emphasized the willingness to pay any price. And I think what is so hard to communicate is that is given gladly, joyously. That yes is not a great yes. because one knows where one's true life lies. It lies in the eternal. It doesn't lie in this. If this has to come apart and just, you know, die on the spot when it's happy, that's why Ramoke again was a little mind-boggled that I do this. But, you know, when that surrender happened, I asked her to call her Master Daisley, and I said to her, Master Daisley, well, it's happened, and I can die happy now. He said, yes, you can. Because our true life is not this life. This is just a temporary vehicle for that. And it is the greatest joy of a human being to be able to give this to the eternal and say, do the work within my heart. What does it matter what the price is? It doesn't matter. Besides, how does anyone know what it is? You just have to take things as they come. And the bodhisattva vows are real. One is willing to pay whatever price so that that karma from the past can get the peace that it has so longed for eons. Rinpoche again so many times said, I mean, over and over again, when one of us is going through something, and again we alternated for months, he'd say, you know, I or you just really need to keep the nerve. Or sometimes we really need to keep our nerve. And here's the keeping the nerve line. O great victor, I hold on, to injure the Creator I cry. Move, move, my defilement, free one. The Master said, the karmic washing is excruciating. The spiritual washing is excruciating. The spiritual bathing is exquisite. These are the lines for when you're going through the excruciating part. It is excruciating. No getting around it. And it would be a pity for anyone to live their life really only partly alive because of fear of going through that. When you do go through it, you're given everything you need. You're given the complete kit to cope with it. And you're taken right out to your limit in terms of what you can endure over and over again. And over and over again, you do this. To injure the Creator, I cry. This is another representative of the eternal here. To that which helps, I cry. I had one time when, of course, one's incredibly conscious of one's need for help. One's very much like a kind of little baby in some respects. There was one time when I was really going through it and really wanted Ramoke again to be there, and she couldn't be. She's doing a sanzen or something. And I just cried out to the guardian. And I can't explain it. Our guardian here, I felt the presence of the guardian there, like I, when Ramoke again's with me, just like another human being with me. That which will help will be with you always. You just have to ask. Not demand. Just ask and sit still in perfect trust. And over again, as a result of doing this, one comes to the next line. Come, come, hear, hear, a joy springs up in me. You can't communicate what it's like in the midst of the darkest place over and over again to find the eternal, the love of the eternal. We all know, the scriptures are full of it. We talk about it all the time. But, 100 billion paintings of a rice cake do not satisfy hunger. One moment of finding the love of the eternal within the darkest hell satisfies hunger. And to have it happen over and over again as each piece of the karmic inheritance comes popping out, and as each story unfolds and as the need is revealed, and then as the specific form of compassion and understanding that meets that need is given. Over and over again, there is this joy that springs up. And there's nothing more magnificent in human life than what I'm speaking of here. It's the miracle. It's like the scripture of great wisdom, not in the kind of static word form, but the scripture of great wisdom like a great inner unfolding. This too, this person being murdered, this situation, the pain of it, the horror of it, the difficulty of it, this too is Buddha. This situation, this person did this terrible, made this terrible mistake and caused so much suffering. This too is Buddha. And those ones it takes more time, by the way. The ones where someone is a victim of something, it comes clean much faster than when someone did something in a willful way that did harm. And it does come clean. Another thing that I learned from Reverend Moak again, I can give such a list of them, was what she called the aquifer, the trickling down of compassion through the various layers till it reaches kind of bedrock level and collects in a great lake of compassion. And to just keep sitting while each story unfolds, keep sitting while each aspect is revealed, and let the compassion of the eternal just trickle down to it until the fundamental need is met. And on the with regard to the main aspects of our karmic inheritance, this is the way it seems always to have to play itself out. Because the need is so deep. The confusion is so great. And one just has to keep one's nerve, be still. When one wobbles, to understand that the wobbles are part of the process. Don't go into panic. Just do the best you can, sit through it, and the essential element in that is the next line: "Speak, speak, give me direction." The way we keep, once having got out of the driver's seat, the way we keep out of the driver's seat, because our past karma can always act upon us. And through the whole process, the thing that's most scary is that one will leap back in the driver's seat and do something really dumb. The power of feeling that arises in its unwatered down state is so intense that one has moments of real fear that one's going to do something really dumb and be swept away. And the way you don't get swept away is just to keep turning towards the eternal and saying, please help. And waiting there, listening, waiting, listening for the direction. And it always comes. When the direction is found, there is the awakened, awakened, I have awakened. And you really could say that each little bit of our karmic inheritance has to go through this while we're giving our body and mind as the pipeline for something to work on it, the compassion of the eternal to work upon it. Each little bit has to awaken. And it's really the... This is when the, you might say, the colors are separating out of the mass of darkness and popping back to the box in their pure form. Each of them has to, each aspect of our karmic inheritance has to find the eternal and the love of the eternal and be bathed in the love of the eternal. Where there was judgment of oneself, there needs to be the recognition that one was always within the hand of the eternal. There is nothing to judge oneself about. There is no action of ourselves or of other people that can separate us from the eternal. And from that love, infinite love, it cares nothing at all for our supposed good and bad actions. It doesn't know how not to love. Wherever there is judgment of ourselves, wherever beings in our stream of karma judge themselves, this is where there is the need for the awakening. But wherever there was just this simple incomprehension of what's called ignorance, or wherever one just simply could not comprehend, take in what was happening, and something just shut down as a way to try to cope with it, that also is where there's a need for the awakening. In some instances, in some aspects of the awakening, it will come suddenly. In others, it will just trickle in. The filling up of the aquifer as the rain falls, the rain of compassion falls, and it trickles through the ground and gradually fills the aquifer up. Each bit of our karmic inheritance will get what it needs in the way that it needs to get it. Again, it's not for us to set up our own standards and say it should be this way or that way, or to try to understand it, just to let it happen. In the whole last part of this, almost like, to me, kind of miraculous scripture, is really a kind of, well, just an expression of gratitude and of certainty. O merciful one, compassionate one, of daring ones, the most joyous hail. Thou art all successful, Hail, not me, Thou. Thou hast attained mastery in the discipline, Hail, not me, Thou. Do you get it? The non-driver's seat. Who is it that does it? Who is it, you know, that is in charge? This is why this non-driver's seat thing is the essential thing that I try to communicate. That and the love of the eternal. Thou hast the weapon within thine hand, Hail. in this case, the weapon of compassion. Thou hast the wheel within thy hand, Hill. The one that turns the wheel of the law is the unborn, not me. Thou who hast the lotus, Hill. Hail to thee who art the root of eternity. Hail to thee who art all compassion. Adoration to the triple treasure, Hail. Give ear unto this my prayer, Hail. Just an expression of certainty and gratitude. Knowing now from one's own experience that it's the Eternal that does 99.999% of the work. And that is enough for me to follow. Is enough for me to follow wherever I am led. You know, many times our Master said, the leaf goes where the wind blows and does not disobey the wind. And frankly, I've discussed this with her, and she has too, to where, you know, you just read the signs of driver's seatishness in such fine detail in a way you never imagined. It's like the illusion of oneself being somehow in control and in charge is like a stain that affects everything one does. And it's a self-made prison. It's a self-made prison. To simply have that stain just washed out, however difficult the washing is worth anything and everything. It changes everything in your perspective on life. It makes the whole world come alive for you in a way it never was. There's nothing, no part of this world that we live in that ever was, is, or will be separate from love with the capital L. So the only thing one can do with one's life is live a life of gratitude. A giving from the non-driver's seat position. That's about all I have to say about that. I kind of run out of scripture here.